Welcome to the Sleepy Podcast. Hi, guys. I'm your host, Jane Lytell. Today, we're going to finish Chapter 2. Before we dive in, I want to highlight two concepts that are covered in the rest of the chapter. One is privacy, specifically personally identifiable information, or PII, and the other is authorization boundaries. If you don't remember Office of Management and Budget Circular A-130, now is the time to burn it into your brain. Think of security and privacy programs as condoms, and they protect an information system. They need to work together, or the information system is going to have an accident. A-130 tells you about the requirements for integrating security and privacy programs. On to PII. PII is simply any kind of information that can be used to identify someone. It's easy when you have a name and address, but what if you only had a first name and location? You have to work a bit harder to identify that person, but it can be done. Think of identifying information as stars in a constellation. The more stars you identify, the name of the constellation comes into view. You can use the same reasoning for PII. Of course, that's not the definition that the federal government gives, but I'm trying to relate a concept. One more, authorization boundaries. It's kind of an amorphous topic, but not really. Think of your information system representing a state on Google Maps, and the data represents different cities. Some cities will be wealthier than others. And altogether, the cities define the perimeter or boundary of the state or your information system. Knowing the boundary of your system and the wealth of your data will help determine how you categorize the system, meaning how bad is your loss going to be if something bad happens to the data? Is it going to have a low impact, medium impact, or high impact? Okay, let's begin. 2.3, Information Security and Privacy in the RMF. We're going to begin with a sidebar called OMB Circular A-130, Integration of Information Security and Privacy. In 2016, OMB revised Circular A-130, the circular establishing general policy for the planning, budgeting, governance, acquisition, and management of federal information, personnel, equipment, funds, information technology resources, and supporting infrastructure and services. The circular addresses responsibilities for protecting federal information resources and managing personally identifiable information, and establishing requirements for information security programs and privacy programs. The circular emphasizes the need for both programs to collaborate on shared objectives. Quote, "While security and privacy are independent and separate disciplines, they're closely related, and it is essential for agencies to take a coordinated approach to identifying and managing security and privacy risks and complying with applicable requirements," close quote. OMB A-130 requires organizations to implement the RMF that is described in this guideline. With the 2016 revision to the circular, OMB also requires organizations to integrate privacy into the RMF process. Quote, "The RMF provides a disciplined and structured process that integrates information security, privacy, and risk management activities into the System Development Lifecycle," that's SDLC. This circular requires organizations to use the RMF to manage privacy risks beyond those that are typically included under the confidentiality objective of the term information security. While many privacy risks relate to the unauthorized access or disclosure of PII, privacy risks may also result from other activities, including the creation, collection, use, and retention of PII, the inadequate quality or integrity of PII, and the lack of appropriate notice, transparency, or participation, close quote. This section of the guideline describes the relationship between information security programs and privacy programs under the RMF. However, subject to OMB policy, organizations retain the flexibility to undertake the integration of privacy into the RMF in the most effective manner, considering the organization's mission and circumstances. That's a sidebar. Now we'll pick up with Chapter 2. Executing the RMF requires close collaboration between information security programs and privacy programs. While information security programs and privacy programs have different objectives, those objectives are overlapping and complementary. Information security programs are responsible for protecting information and information systems from unauthorized access, use, disclosure, disruption, modification, or destruction, that is, unauthorized system activity or behavior, in order to provide, and here we go again, confidentiality, integrity, and availability. Privacy programs are responsible for ensuring compliance with applicable privacy requirements and for managing the risks to individuals associated with the creation, collection, use, processing, dissemination, storage, maintenance, disclosure, or disposal, collectively referred to as processing of PII. While preparing to execute the steps in the RMF, organizations consider how to best promote and institutionalize collaboration between the two programs to ensure that the objectives of both disciplines are met at every step in the process. When an information system processes PII, the organization's information security program and privacy program have a shared responsibility for managing the risks to individuals that may arise from unauthorized system activity or behavior. This requires the two programs to collaborate when selecting, implementing, assessing, and monitoring security controls. However, while information security programs and privacy programs have complementary objectives with respect to managing the, one more time, confidentiality, integrity, and availability of PII, protecting individuals' privacy cannot be achieved solely by securing PII. Not all privacy risks arise from unauthorized system activity or behavior, such as unauthorized access or disclosure of PII. Some privacy risks may result from authorized activity that is beyond the scope of information security. For example, privacy programs are responsible for managing the risks to individuals that may result from the creation, collection, use, and retention of PII, the inadequate quality or integrity of PII, and the lack of appropriate notice, transparency, or participation. Therefore, to help ensure compliance with the applicable privacy requirements and to manage privacy risks from authorized and unauthorized processing of PII, organizations' privacy programs also select, implement, assess, and monitor privacy controls. OMB A130 defines a privacy control as an administrative, technical, or physical safeguard employed within an agency to ensure compliance with applicable privacy requirements and to manage privacy risks. A privacy control is different from a security control, which the circular defines as a safeguard or countermeasure prescribed for an information system or an organization to protect, one more time, the confidentiality, integrity, and availability of the system and its information. Due to the shared responsibility that organizations' information security programs and privacy programs have to manage the risks to individuals arising from unauthorized system activity or behavior, controls that achieve both security and privacy objectives are both privacy and security controls. This guideline refers to such controls that achieve both sets of objectives simply as controls. When the guideline uses the descriptors privacy and security with the term control, it is referring to those controls in circumstances where the controls are selected, implemented, and assessed for particular objectives. The risk management processes described in this publication are equally applicable to security and privacy programs. However, the risks that security and privacy programs are required to manage are overlapping in some areas, but not in others. Consequently, it is important that organizations understand the interplay between privacy and security to promote effective collaboration between security and privacy officials at every level of the organization. 2.4, system and system elements. This publication uses the statutory definition of information system for RMF execution. It is important, however, to describe information systems in the context of the SDLC, remember System Development Lifecycle, process, and how security and privacy capabilities are implemented within the components of those systems. Therefore, organizations executing the RMF take a broad view of the lifecycle of information system development to provide a contextual relationship and linkage to the architectural and engineering concepts that allow security and privacy risks, including supply chain risks, to be addressed throughout the lifecycle and at appropriate level of detail to help ensure that such capabilities are achieved. ISO 15288 provides an engineering view of an information system and the entities with which the system interacts in its environment of operation. Similar to how federal law defines information system as a discrete set of information resources organized for the collection, processing, maintenance, use, sharing, dissemination, or disposition of information. This is a run-on sentence. Okay, NIST has written a run-on sentence. How should this be fixed? I think it relates to the sentence above about ISO 15288 when it talks about this standard providing an engineering view of an information system. It makes sense then that the next sentence would be that ISO 15288 is similar to how federal law defines information system as a discrete set of information resources organized for the collection, processing, maintenance, use, sharing, dissemination, or disposition of information. ISO 15288 defines a system as a set of interacting elements that are organized to achieve one or more stated purposes. Just as the information resources that comprise an information system include information and other resources, for example, personnel, equipment, funds, and information technology, system elements include technology or machine elements, human elements, and physical or environmental elements. Each of the system elements within the system fulfills specified requirements and may be implemented via hardware, software, or firmware. Physical structures or devices, or people, processes, policies, and procedures. Individual system elements or a combination of system elements may satisfy stated system requirements. Interconnections between system elements allow those elements to interact as necessary to produce a capability as specified by the system requirements. Finally, every system operates within an environment that influences the system and its operation. The authorization boundary defines the system for RMF execution to facilitate risk management and accountability. The system may be supported by one or more enabling systems that provide support during the system lifecycle. Enabling systems are not contained within the authorization boundary of the system and do not necessarily exist in the system's environment of operation. An enabling system may provide, that is, inherited controls for the system, or may include any type of service or functionality used by the system, such as identification and authentication services, network services, or monitoring functionality. Finally, there are other systems the system interacts with in the operational environment. The other systems are also outside of the authorization boundary and may be the beneficiaries of services provided by the system or may simply have some general interaction. Figure 5 illustrates the conceptual view of the system and the relationships among the system, system elements, enabling systems, other systems, and the environment of operation. Figure 5, the conceptual view of the system, is nothing more than, again, a triangle. NIST loves triangles. Each vertex of the triangle is called system element. And outside the triangle, you have arrows that go back and forth that say enabling system. On the bottom of the triangle, there are arrows that go back and forth between the triangle and other system. Let's continue. Certain parts of the environment of operation may be included in the authorization boundary, that is, determined to be in scope for the authorization, while other parts may be excluded. For example, if the facility, that is, environment of operation, that provides protection for the system elements is determined to be in scope for the authorization of the system, the physical and environmental protection controls, for example, physical access controls at entry points, perimeter protection devices, are included in the authorization boundary and therefore are included in the system security plan. If the facility provides physical and environmental protections as common controls to be inherited by the system, the environment of the operation is out of scope for the system and is not included in the authorization boundary for the system. The system may also communicate or have interactions with enabling systems and other systems that are part of the extended environment of operation but are outside of the scope of authorization for the system. Organizations determine which parts of the environment of operation are with the authorization boundary. These determinations are typically specific to the system and are context-driven. 2.5. Authorization boundaries. The authorization boundary establishes the scope of protection for an information system, that is, what the organization agrees to protect under its direct management or within the scope of its responsibilities. The authorization boundary includes the people, processes, and information technologies, system elements, that are part of each system supporting the organization's missions and business functions. Authorization boundaries that are too expansive, include too many system elements or components, make the risk management process unnecessarily complex. Conversely, authorization boundaries that are too limited, that is, include too few system elements or components, increase the number of systems that must be separately managed and therefore may unnecessarily inflate the information security and privacy costs for the organization. The authorization boundary for a system is established during the RMF prepare task, system level, task P11. Organizations have flexibility in determining what constitutes the authorization boundary for a system. The set of system elements included within an authorization boundary defines the system, that is, the scope of the authorization. When a set of system elements is identified as an authorization boundary for a system, the elements are generally under the same direct management. Other considerations for determining the authorization boundary include identifying system elements that 1. Support the same mission or business functions, 2. Have similar operating characteristics and security and privacy requirements, 3. Process, store, and transmit similar types of information, for example, categorized at the same impact level, or 4. Reside in the same environment of operation, or in the case of a distributed system, reside in various locations with similar operating environments. The scope of the authorization boundary is revisited periodically as part of the continuous monitoring process carried out by the organization. While the above considerations may be useful to organizations in determining authorization boundaries for purposes of managing risk, the considerations are not intended to limit the organization's flexibility in establishing authorization boundaries that promote effective security and privacy with the available resources of the organization. The process of establishing authorization boundaries carries significant risk management implications and is therefore an organization-wide activity that requires coordination among key participants. The process considers mission and business requirements, security and privacy requirements, and the cost to the organization. Appendix G provides additional information and considerations for determining authorization boundaries, including boundaries for complex systems and software applications. Here's one short sidebar: effective authorization boundaries. Establishing meaningful authorization boundaries for systems and common controls is one of the most important risk management activities carried out by an organization. The authorization boundary defines the specific scope of an authorizing official's responsibility and accountability for protecting information resources and individuals' privacy, including the use of systems, components, and services from external providers. Establishment of meaningful authorization boundaries is a foundation for assuring mission and business success for the organization. 2.6. Requirements and controls. Before executing the RMF, it is important to understand the concept of security and privacy requirements and the relationship between requirements and controls. The term requirements can be used in different contexts. In the context of federal information security and privacy policies, the term is generally used to refer to information security and privacy obligations imposed on organizations. For example, OMB Circular A-130 imposes a series of information security and privacy requirements with which federal agencies must comply when managing information resources. In addition to the use of the term requirements in the context of federal policy, the term requirements is used in this guideline in a broader sense to refer to an expression of the set of stakeholder protection needs for a particular system or organization. Stakeholder protection needs and corresponding security and privacy requirements may be derived from many sources, for example, laws, executive orders, directives, regulations, policies, standards, mission and business needs, or risk assessments. The term requirements, as used in this guideline, includes both legal and policy requirements, as well as an expression of the broader set of stakeholder protection needs that may be derived from other sources. All of these requirements, when applied to a system, help determine the required characteristics of the system, encompassing security, privacy, and assurance. Organizations may choose to divide security and privacy requirements into more granular categories, depending on where the requirements are employed in the SDLC and for what purpose. Organizations may use the term capability requirement to describe a capability that the system or organization must provide to satisfy a stakeholder protection need. In addition, organizations may refer to system requirements that pertain to particular hardware, software, and firmware components of a system as specification requirements, that is, capabilities that implement all or part of a control and that may be assessed, that is, as part of the verification, validation, testing, and evaluation processes. Finally, organizations may use the term statement of work requirements to refer to actions that must be performed operationally or during system development. Controls can be viewed as descriptions of the safeguards and protection capabilities appropriate for achieving the particular security and privacy objectives of the organization and reflecting the protection needs of organizational stakeholders. Controls are selected and implemented by the organization in order to satisfy the system requirements. Controls can include technical aspects, administrative aspects, and physical aspects. In some cases, the selection and implementation of a control may necessitate additional specification by the organization in the form of derived requirements or instantiated control parameter values. The derived requirements and control parameter values may be necessary to provide the appropriate level of implementation detail for particular controls within the SDLC. Here's another short sidebar: context-dependent requirements. Security and privacy requirements and risks identified by the organization lead to the need for security and privacy controls to respond to the risk. The controls selected by the organization subsequently lead to both specification requirements and statement of work requirements in the systems engineering context. This is an important aspect of how systems engineers develop, derive, and decompose requirements as part of the SDLC process. Thus, organizations manage security and privacy requirements at various levels of granularity and specificity during the lifecycle of the system. Controls play an important part in the lifecycle by providing high-level statements of protection capability that can be refined and expanded upon by the organization. 2.7, security and privacy posture. The purpose of the RMF is to help ensure that throughout the SDLC information systems, organizations and individuals are adequately protected, and that authorizing officials have the information needed to make credible, risk-based decisions regarding the operation or use of systems or the provision of common controls. A key aspect of risk-based decision-making for authorizing officials is understanding the security and privacy posture of information systems and the common controls that are available for inheritance by those systems. The security and privacy posture represent the status of information systems and information resources, for example, personnel, equipment, funds, and information technology within an organization based on information assurance, for example, people, hardware, software, policies, procedures, and the capabilities in place to manage the defense of the organization in its operation or use of systems, comply with applicable privacy requirements and manage privacy risks, and react as the situation changes. The security and privacy posture of information systems and organizations is determined on an ongoing basis by assessing and continuously monitoring system-specific, hybrid, and common controls. The control assessments and monitoring activities provide evidence that the controls selected by the organization are implemented correctly, operating as intended, and satisfying the security and privacy requirements in response to laws, executive orders, regulations, directives, policies, standards, or mission and business requirements. Authorizing officials use the term security and privacy posture to determine if the risk to organizational operations and assets, individuals, other organizations, or the nation are acceptable based on the organization's risk management strategy and organizational risk tolerance. 2.8, last section, supply chain risk management. Organizations are becoming increasingly reliant on products, systems, and services provided by external providers to carry out mission and business functions. Organizations are responsible and accountable for the risk incurred when using such component products, systems, and services. Relationships with external providers can be established in a variety of ways, for example, through joint ventures, business partnerships, various types of formal agreements, for example, contracts, interagency agreements, lines of business arrangements, licensing agreements, or outsourcing arrangements. The growing dependence on products, systems, and services from external providers, along with the nature of the relationships with those providers, present an increasing amount of risk to an organization. Risk may increase based on the likelihood of occurrence and adverse impact from threat events, such as the insertion of counterfeits, unauthorized production, tampering, theft, insertion of malicious software and hardware, as well as poor manufacturing and development practices in the supply chain, including the failure to build in security or privacy capabilities that enable an organization to better manage risk in its environment. Supply chain risk can be endemic or systemic within a system element, system, organization, sector, or nation. While the singular use of a system element or service within a system may present an acceptable risk to an organization, its common or extended use throughout a system, organization, sector, or nation can raise the risk to an unacceptable level. These risks are often associated with the global and distributed nature of product and service supply chains and an organization's decreased visibility into and understanding of how the technology that they acquire is developed, integrated, and deployed. This includes the processes, procedures, and practices used to assure the integrity, security, resilience, privacy capabilities, and quality of acquired products, systems, and services. To address supply chain risks, organizations develop a SCRM policy, that supply chain risk management policy, which is an important vehicle for directing SCRM activities. Guided and informed by applicable laws, executive orders, directive, policies, and regulations, the SCRM policy supports applicable organizational policies, for example, acquisition and procurement, information security and privacy, logistics, quality, and supply chain. The policy addresses the goals and objectives in the organization's strategic plan, missions and business functions, and the internal and external customer requirements. It also defines the integration points for SCRM with the risk management and SDLC processes for the organization. Finally, the SCRM policy defines the SCRM roles and responsibilities within the organization, any dependencies among those roles, and the interaction among the roles. SCRM roles specify the responsibilities for procurement, conducting risk assessments, collecting supply chain threat intelligence, identifying and implementing risk-based mitigations, and performing monitoring functions. FSMA and OMB A130 require external providers handling federal information or operating systems on behalf of the federal government to meet the same security and privacy requirements as federal agencies. Security and privacy requirements for external providers, including the controls for systems processing, storing, or transmitting federal information, are expressed in contracts or other formal agreements. The RMF can be effectively used to manage supply chain risk. The conceptual view of the system in Figure 5 can guide and inform security, privacy, and risk management activities for all elements of the supply chain. Every step in the RMF can be executed by non-federal external providers except for the authorized step. That is, the acceptance of risk is an inherent federal responsibility for which senior executives are held responsible and accountable. The authorization decision is directly linked to the management of risk related to the acquisition and use of component products, systems, and services from external providers. OMB A130 also requires organizations to develop and implement SCRM plans. Managing supply chain risk is a complex, multifaceted undertaking requiring a coordinated effort across an organization, building trust relationships, and communicating with both internal and external stakeholders. SCRM activities involve identifying and assessing applicable risks, determining appropriate mitigating actions, developing appropriate SCRM plans to document selected mitigating actions, and monitoring performance against SCRM plans. Because supply chains differ across and within organizations, SCRM plans are tailored to the individual program, organizational, and operational contexts. Tailored plans provide the basis for determining whether a system is quote-unquote fit for purpose, and as such, the controls need to be tailored accordingly. Tailored SCRM plans help organizations to focus their resources on the most critical missions and business functions based on mission and business requirements and their risk environment. The determination that the risk from acquiring products, systems, or services from external providers is acceptable depends on the level of assurance that the organization can gain from the providers. The level of assurance is based on the degree of control the organization can exert on the external provider regarding the controls needed for the protection of the product, system, or service, and the evidence brought forth by the provider as to the effectiveness of those controls. The degree of control is established by the specific terms and conditions of the contract or service level agreement. Some organizations have extensive control through contract vehicles or other agreements that specify the security and privacy requirements for the external provider. Other organizations, in contrast, have limited control because they are purchasing commodity services or commercial off-the-shelf products. The level of assurance can also be based on many other factors that convince the organization that the requisite controls have been implemented and that a credible determination of control effectiveness exists. For example, an authorized external cloud service provided to an organization through a well-established line of business relationship may provide a level of trust in the service that is within the risk tolerance of the organization. Ultimately, the responsibility for responding to risks from the use of component products, systems, and services from external providers remains with the organization and the authorizing official. Organizations require that an appropriate chain of trust be established with external providers when dealing with issues associated with system security or privacy risks. One short sidebar, supply chain risk management strategies and plans, and then we're done. Organizations have flexibility on how the details of SCRM strategies and plans are documented. SCRM strategy details for levels 1 and 2, that's the organization and mission and business process levels, can be documented in the information security program plan for the organization or in a separate organizational level and or mission business process level SCRM strategy. SCRM plan details for level 3, that's the information system level, can be documented in the information system security plan or in a separate system level SCRM plan. A SCRM strategy template is provided in SP 800-161. Okay, guys, that's it for chapter 2. We'll pick up next week with chapter 3, the process, executing the risk management framework tasks. If you've nodded off, I don't blame you. It's okay. I'll still be here. Good night.